Hello, I'm Quinton Lee. This is number 0357, the Stufffire program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stufffire program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stufffile program, number 0357. And coming up on this edition of the Stufffile program, you'll meet Lisa Luckett. She's a 9/11 widow and the founder of Cosmina Enlightened Living. She talks about grief.
When my husband Teddy died, it was my first experience of really any kind of death that was out of order. It would have been nice if I could have known if there was somewhat of a timeline or a process that I could kind of predict or understand, you know, to handle and understand what was coming. It was about a 2-year window till things became a new normal. It would not be the same again, but until you'd gone through the processes of a first year of going through everything the first time.
Bob Dorigo Jones is back with this year's finalist for the Wacky Warning Label Contest.
People from all over North America continue to send us these. They're all trying to get that $1,000 grand prize. We have a lot of fun with this. Obviously, there's a serious point behind this with the litigation leading to the need for these warning labels. But once a year, we like to have a laugh at the expense of the personal injury lawyers who bring all these lawsuits.
Edward Meyer from Ripley's Believe It or Not talks about a brand new writing contest they have this summer that's just great for kids.
200 words or less, tell us an amazing thing that happened to you. And we're giving away prizes of $500 for each age group, 4 different age groups, then another $1,000 for the best of the best all around, and then another $1,000 for the most creative person that writes their story on something either / unusual or directly related to the story.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0357 was Quinton Lee, who was a finance student at McGill University. Thank you very much, Quinton, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stufffile program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A woman was arrested on a charge of theft after allegedly stealing a man's debit card while she was having oral sex with him in a car. Nashville police said they have arrested 25-year-old Jonicia Morris after being accused of stealing while having sex in a parked car outside the Clarion Hotel. Morris was charged with theft, fraudulent use of a credit card, and indecent exposure. According to the police investigation, Morris was performing a sex act on the victim while sitting in the car. And while performing the act, Morris removed the victim's wallet from his pants pocket that was around his ankles. She then took the debit card that she used at a gas station to buy fuel and other items. She then returned the victim's wallet to the pants pocket. When questioned, Morris admitted to numerous credit card thefts. Wow. Stealing the debit card while performing oral sex. This is a woman who is clearly capable of multitasking. And by the way, I have a simple question. Since the guy's pants were around his ankles, why is Jonicia the only person charged with indecent exposure? Just asking. Anyway, 32-year-old Eric Porkchop Cox, in an angry construction site clash in DeBary, Florida in June, used his front-end loader to dump two heaps of dirt onto his boss, 57-year-old Perry Bird, burying him up to his waist before co-workers intervened. Cox said Bird had taken the first swing and that he had only accidentally engaged the loader when trying to turn it off, but Bird claimed that Cox was laughing during the episode. Cox was arrested. I'm also going on the assumption that he was also fired. Just a guess. Because, you know, there's only so much that a boss can forgive. Yeah. 38-year-old Robert Williams was arrested on June 1st in Colorado after challenging his daughter to a duel with handguns. Williams had pointed a gun at his daughter, then demanded that she grab one too. The daughter's age was not reported, but police say that she and Williams both got shots off that missed. You know, clearly this is a Darwin starter kit family, because if they can do something as idiotic as this, there's no telling what they have planned in the future to help remove themselves from the planet. Meanwhile, in May, the Norwegian Consumer Council staged a live 32-hour TV broadcast marathon, 32 hours, a word-for-word reading of the terms of service for internet applications such as Instagram, Spotify, and more than two dozen others, totaling 900 pages and 250,000 words of legal restrictions and conditions that millions of users voluntarily agree to when they sign up, usually via a mouse click or finger swipe. A council official calls such terms bordering on absurd, as consumers cannot possibly understand everything that they are legally binding themselves to. The reading was another example of Norway's fascination with what they call, quote, slow TV, unquote. They've had success with other marathons, such as coverage of a world record attempt at knitting yarn and five 24-hour days on a salmon fishing boat. Riveting. I'm convinced if Norwegians watch continuous coverage of the U.S. election campaign, their heads would explode. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a woman in Birmingham, England, was surfing Facebook when the social media site presented her with people you may know, suggesting she friend them. One of those people startled her, since she recognized him instantly as the man who had held her up at knife point. She called police. The Facebook connection was a crucial part of the investigation, said Detective Constable Rhiannon Duff, representing the final piece of the jigsaw. 21-year-old Omar Famuyide was tied into multiple robberies, and he was sentenced to 17 years in prison. Yet another case of a criminal undone by social media. Well, here's some Facebook euphemisms that he won't be enjoying in jail. Like, unfriend, and poke. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? How long should grief last? That's a question we put to Lisa Luckett, who is the founder of Cosmina Enlightened Living. She is also a cancer survivor and a 9/11 widow and single mother. Lisa joins us on the line from Florida. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Peter. Hi. How are you today?
Just tickety-boo. You know, we're living in a time right now, unfortunately, where there's certainly a lot of grief to go around. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you certainly have had your share of it. I'm sure there have been times where people would tell you whatever you're going through, oh, you've got to get over it, or you've got to move on, or you've got to do that. How do you handle those situations, and what do you think is the right thing people should do in helping others with their grief?
Well, Peter, grief is a very personal experience. First of all, grief can come with any experience, anything. It can come with any form of change. Right now we're talking about traumatic loss, death, a cancer diagnosis, a sick parent, you know, things that are really ongoing and sad. For my experience, when my husband Teddy died, it was my first experience of really any kind of death that was out of order. And it would have been nice if I could have known if there was somewhat of a timeline or a process that I could kind of predict or understand, you know, to handle and understand what was coming. So my experience basically showed me that it was about a two-year window till things became a new normal. It would not be the same again, but until you'd gone through the processes of a first year of going through everything the first time, with all the support of the people around you and the love and all the amazing camaraderie that comes with a loss. What people don't understand when they're looking out at the fear of a trauma, which we all do, You can only see the negative. What you don't see is there's a beautiful support that comes right along the backside and flanks it. So the first year is very supported, and then you have the second year. And the second year is different in the sense that you go through it all over again, but you usually do it more by yourself because people have gone back to their lives, and they should. I mean, we need to progress forward. We're not leaving anybody behind. We're not moving on and forgetting. And I think one of the biggest pieces of grieving a lost loved one is the fear that letting go is the same as forgetting. And what I have found is you never forget them. I didn't know that. I was afraid of that. So the love, somebody you have loved, because love is eternal and love is much bigger than we are, but it is how we are connected, you will always be connected to that person.
Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're a 9/11 widow. Your husband was killed. He was in the World Trade Center in the tower when those planes hit. The fact that his death was not only so public, but so sudden, does that change or did that change your level of grief?
That's a good question because in my experience, yes, it was sudden. But I've had people who've lost their husbands with children that have lost them to cancer. And it's a different death because there's actually time to say goodbye when you have someone who's sick. In a sudden loss, it's immediate. And the change I went through was a numbness, actually a shock. And in my case, I had three small children. So I had this distraction, built-in natural distraction, because it became very simple. It was about the kids. I had to get them through this. And we live in a very positive world in my house, and I was determined that they would live happy, productive, healthy lives, that we would make it through this. So grief from something sudden is a different experience, I think.
Generally speaking, are you a strong person, or did all that has happened to you make you a stronger person?
I think that what happened to me tested me. I was probably always strong, but I wouldn't have said that. I've been described as a strong personality, but I wasn't sure what that meant and didn't really take it as a compliment. But I will say today, 15 years later, I am strong and very happy about that. But yes, it has been something, a skill. It's been something that has been developed and nurtured in through all of these struggles, because the struggle is where life's richness is. And that's where our wisdom is gained.
You mentioned in experiencing grief in the first year, it's a year of firsts. And in the second year, you do it more alone. As you get to a routine where life is more or less at a normalcy, do you at any time feel any pangs of guilt that you are returning to normal?
I wouldn't say guilt. I would say more a missing. That, you know, you miss that person, you miss them missing out. My first thing I grieved was actually for my husband, that he wasn't going to see the children grow up. I would never have expected that.
We're going through a period of grief right now with all that's going on in the news. The people, for instance, who are in Florida, who are suffering from directly from what has taken place with that mass shooting, are grieving. But there are people by association, by watching it through the news, who are going through grieving periods themselves. What do you say to those who are touched by it but who aren't personally involved?
I think that's probably a better relationship to the experience of 9/11 that most people had, because most of us watched it, including me, on television. So it's a personal in the sense that you knew somebody there, and you can now, in 15 years post 9/11, with all of the terrorism that we're now living with, we can compassionately identify and ultimately put ourselves in that place. So the truth is, I think that we have a significant fear factor going on here. And the truth with grief is it morphs and changes over time. That there's my best suggestion, which should just be to allow it to wash over you, what it will present is some incredible insights, and it simplifies our busy lives and makes things, you know, come down to very simple, important things, which is the people you love, and to spend time with them instead of being worried that this is going to happen to you or that this, you know, God forbid, could happen to someone you know. You just have to live more, even more in the moment, and just be appreciative of what we have today, because things can change in a snap, as we now know.
Do you think that men and women grieve differently?
I think women have always been more allowed more in our society to show their feelings more. I think men, though, in our generation, and I was born in the early in 1960, so I've watched the evolution of men being allowed to cry. I think it's still not the norm, but I think the children of today, my children, my adult, young adult teenagers and young 20s, are much, much, much more in touch with their emotions and not shamed by them. So we have a brilliant future coming with this generation and these kids. They are different than we are. The social norms have changed, and emotional reaction is a human trait, and we are human before we are anything, and to embrace our humanity is just to live life in a more happy, joyful way, ultimately feeling everything. So
do you think
that might be hard sometimes, but
do you think with that there's more empathy?
I think there is more empathy. I think your question about watching it on television and watching the news is very upsetting, different from 9/11. I mean, the people in Orlando, actually, there were so many witnesses who lived through the carnage of that we don't, I mean, the rescue and recovery workers that dug through the wreckage of 9/11 for 9 months experienced that carnage, but that wasn't in real time. It didn't happen during the event. It was an afterword, even though it was exactly a war zone the same way. These people literally lived through a battle. So to watch that on television and to hear their descriptions of it is a very different experience for me.
We have just a minute or so to go. I mentioned in the introduction that you're the founder of Cosmina Enlightened Living. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So Cosmina is my way of giving back all of the love and generosity and support that was given to my children and I over the last 15 years. And it's a lifestyle idea. It's a lifestyle platform or brand based on the foundational elements of warmth, comfort and care, consideration, grace and decency. So it's really about finding comfort through your five senses. It's about taking care of yourself as you take care of other people, because caregivers need to restore themselves. And it's really ultimately about connecting all the like-minded thinkers out there who see that love and kindness really is the best way.
Right. You mentioned caregivers. I know there's a lot of baby boomers out there who are the sandwich generation, taking care of their kids and taking care of their parents. You're absolutely right when you say that caregivers have to take care of themselves as well. People can find more information by going to your website, which is cosmina.com, and that's C-O-Z-M-E-E-N-A, correct?
That's correct.
Lisa, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. Have a great day.
Lisa Luckett, founder of Cosmina Enlightened Living. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0357, and you'll find the link to her site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, we'll touch base with Bob DiRigo Jones. He has the finalists in the Wacky Warning Labels contest. Plus, Edward Meyer from Ripley's Believe It or Not has a contest to share for kids this summer that could earn them big bucks. That's all coming up here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But right now, more Stuff File news right here, right now. After a car versus tree hit and run, police were able to trace the offense to 31-year-old Deke Walker of New Farthingdale, Dormansland, England. Now, according to prosecutor Melanie Watton, Walker admitted to driving the car, even though he was disqualified from driving. Walker was arrested on multiple traffic offenses and for assaulting an officer for biting the investigator. However, it appears to be more of a suck rather than a bite, Watton agreed, because Mr. Walker doesn't have any teeth. A judge gave Walker a suspended sentence of 16 weeks. He was also given a curfew, ordered to repay court costs, and was disqualified from driving for another 12 months. Gee, the guilt will be gnawing at him for a long time. By the way, is it really enough to restrict someone's driving for another year when they already have a suspended license? I mean, clearly this guy isn't paying attention. That's like also ordering him to floss. It's a moot point. Yeah. And we have another twisted story of school love, but even by the standards of other stories like this, this one is really out there. 25-year-old Alexandria Vera, a teacher at Stouffville Middle School in Aldine, Texas, faces 25 years to life in prison after allegedly having sex with a 13-year-old student almost daily for 9 months. Yeah, it's weird, but that's not the weird part. Vera didn't hide the relationship from the boy's parents. She says she was introduced as his girlfriend at the school's open house, and his parents not only invited her to family gatherings, they were very supportive and excited when they found out that she was pregnant by their son. She later got nervous and had an abortion. Yeah. Remember back in the day when it was all innocent, when you would, you know, bring an apple into school for your teacher? Well, little did we know that that was going to take on biblical proportions. Also, that kid has an interesting family, to say the least. Are the parents going to be up on charges as well? Inquiring minds want to know. Anyway, web-based loan sharks in China have found an unconventional way of guaranteeing loans, demanding naked photos from cash-strapped female college students who want to borrow money. The state-run Southern Metropolis Daily reported that private lenders are asking the young women to send nude photos of themselves as a form of collateral, along with copies of their ID cards. They warn that the photos will be made public if payments are not made on time. One of the borrowers told the newspaper that she first borrowed 500 yen, that's about 76 bucks US, from an online loan provider with a weekly interest rate of 30%. She kept taking out new loans to pay off old ones, and her debt snowballed to about 8,345 bucks when the lender demanded a nude photo of her as a guarantee for new loans. posing as a potential client, a reporter for the newspaper was able to get evidence of loan sharks demanding naked photos by joining online chat groups frequented by lenders. Loan sharks also demanded personal information from borrowers, including phone numbers, ID numbers, home addresses, parents' names, contacts for roommates, and student registration information, which the lenders threatened to make public should the borrower default. After the story was published, loan sharks suspended the practice. Interesting how they always threaten to go public with the pictures, and there's no story saying that they actually did go public with the pictures, proving once again that often you can call a bully's bluff. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a hospital called for a rescue crew to help with a patient they couldn't handle by themselves. It's really dangerous because inevitably people leave it too long to come see us because they are embarrassed, said Peter Sutherland, a firefighter in New South Wales, Australia. Or say, my wife said to put butter on it, sleep on it, and it will go down. But he adds, it never does. What are we talking about? Well, the lesson here is don't stick body parts into steel tools, in this case, a ring spanner. The blood goes into the appendage, whether it's a finger or whatever, Sutherland said. It just swells up, and by the time you realize it, it's too late. In this case, the appendage was a whatever. The man put his, tool into the tool, and it got stuck. Firefighters used an angle grinder to cut the steel to free the man's penis. How did they know what to do? We do quite a few of them, Sutherland said. The town, by the way, you want to know what the name of it is in New South Wales? Tweed Heads. Yeah. Why would a guy put a spanner around his privates? Well, you know, perhaps he misunderstood the true meaning of the tool. I mean, after all, a spanner is usually used to tighten and loosen nuts. Just saying. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff All program, shall we? The years go by quickly. We've now reached the 19th annual Wacky Warning Labels Contest, and if you listened to last week's show, then you know our regular feature with Bob DiRigo-Jones called Let's Be Fair touched on the latest contest. It proves just how far companies will go to avoid being sued by consumers for stupid mishaps. So, what are some of the nominees for this 19th year? Well, Bob, who is also the author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever, is on to talk with us once again about this year's entries. Joins us from Michigan via Skype. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Peter. Nice to talk with you.
Nice to have you on the program once again. So I know when we played the Let's Be Fair from the last week's show, you said in that program, which is something we've always discussed, is that you know after 19 years, you still find it hard to believe that these keep coming up and they're just as wacky as ever.
Yes, I thought for sure we'd run out of these things. And because of the power of what you do and broadcasting and radio, people from all over North America continue to send us these. They're all trying to get that $1,000 grand prize. And we have a lot of fun with this. Obviously, there's a serious point behind this with the litigation leading to the need for these warning labels. But once a year, we like to have a laugh at the expense of the personal injury lawyers who bring all these lawsuits.
Over the years, have you ever heard from any of the companies that were featured in the Wacky Warning Labels contest?
We have, and not many, though. Most of them, you might expect, once they're done with litigation, they want to leave it in the dust. And that's the last thing they want to do is rehash something that has wound through the courts for months, cost them usually tens of thousands of dollars. So it is rare. And every year we call the manufacturers, and usually we get that they don't want to make a comment, which we understand. For one thing, they don't want to encourage copycat lawsuits by others, and there's a lot of other concerns too. So usually it's the smaller businesses, the family-owned. Right outside of Detroit here, there is a family-owned business that's been making fishing lures for 100 years, and it's a great product, the Daredevil fishing lures. And their hook, 4-inch long hook with a trident hanging off it. It looks like an ominous looking hook. It says, warning, harmful if swallowed. And we asked her about that, and she said yes. The lawyer said we had to have it. It cost about $20,000 in legal fees before they finally got to that point. So we know that this is a serious problem, and we hear from when we go to conferences and get together with lawyers, we hear that they support what we're doing and trying to raise awareness of this problem, but they don't want to be the ones to go on and hear and talk about it.
Mm. Now, this is the 19th year, as I've mentioned. I actually have the top five finalists here in front of me, and I'm actually surprised in that I actually find one of them not that wacky, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Okay, I'm looking forward to hearing which one that is.
But, I went on your website and found the list of the top five, so I'll ask you to guess which one I don't think is that wacky.
I am guessing, does it have to do with coffee?
No, that to me seems pretty obvious.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. Is it the one with the blades are sharp?
No, I'll tell you which one it is, because, you know, there are a lot of people out there who didn't follow through on science in school, don't know Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah.
And the one about the Mylar balloons seems like an actual legitimate warning.
Well, it is. And here's why we included it. And we'll let your audience know what the... It's a helium party balloon. And it says, in California, do not release outdoors or near electric power lines as it may cause power outages.
Is it the fact that it's only in California that warning is used?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Because that same... warning, that same danger applies in Ohio, New York, Michigan, Florida, you name it. So that's a perfect example of something that is specifically geared toward fear of being sued in one specific state.
Well, why, even if they were afraid of being sued specifically in California, why don't they just make a blanket statement and remove California? I mean, it's part of the U.S. It's assumed that if it's an American product, it would be for all, you know, 50 states.
Right, and that's a good question, because another whole subset of warning labels is motivated by another law in California, and those usually don't. About half the time they will mention California, and half the time they won't. The Proposition 56, which has to do with chemicals in products, and if there's any level of a chemical in a product sold in California, it has to have a warning. It could have an absolutely zero chance of harming anybody, but if they don't put a warning label mentioning that the chemical is in there, then they could be sued, and they are sued. Their business is being sued left and right in California over this law, and that's why the fishing lure actually had the warning, harmful if swallowed, because it was a metal fishing lure, and lo and behold, it had lead in it. And even though no human is going to swallow this, they have to put that on there. So California has done some quirky things with their laws, some of them well-intended, but they have an often bizarre effect on the warning labels that we see.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the others, the four other top five finalists that are in this year's 2016 Wacky Warning Labels Contest, starting off with the one for a Star Wars lightsaber.
Yes, that warns for accessory use only, not to be used as a battle device.
Now, again, the wording I find very strange there, because, you know, some people will question, what exactly is accessory use?
Yes, I know we've been getting that question a lot. It's probably meant that it's to be part of a costume, whether it's a Halloween, it's an accessory to a Halloween costume. And that's what led us to believe that that's really a serious warning label, because a lot of times they're tongue-in-cheek and they're meant to get people to laugh, and so we don't include those kinds. But this one, we're pretty sure had the basis in some kind of shenanigan that led to this warning label.
The next one, warning for a common utility knife.
Warning, blades are sharp. They'd probably be sued if they weren't sharp.
They'll probably be sued by Reuben Blades.
Well, and here's the interesting thing. Nowadays, we're seeing more and more manufacturers warning about their products having the intended use that they were manufactured for. So they're warning people that if you use our product properly, this could happen. And it's kind of counterintuitive, but again, it's if they don't, they can find themselves in court.
Mm. Meanwhile, on to one that I find very, very bizarre, a warning on a bicycle bell?
Yes, this is an ominous-sounding warning. It says, cycling can be dangerous. Bicycle products should be installed and serviced by a professional mechanic. Failure to heed any of these warnings may result in serious injury or death. And you have this little bell.
You see, to me, based on the fact that it's a bicycle bell, to me, that's the winner.
That's got a real good chance, I think. Some of my favorites over the years have had to do with bicycling. There was one that came on some shin pads. I think these were used by BMX bikers. And it said, warning, pads will not protect any part of the body they do not cover. No kidding.
Oh, man. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that is crazy.
And finally, the one you alluded to earlier, the glass coffee pot.
It says, warning, do not hold over people. Okay.
Now, how do you assume people are sitting around an enormous boardroom deciding what the what the warning is going to be? Because who came up with that one?
Well, that more than likely came not from the people that write the user guide, but the legal department having their input into what needs to go on there to protect themselves from being sued. So anytime you have hot coffee involved, you're going to see some common sense warnings, but sometimes some things that are a little outrageous like this.
Again, you've been doing this now for 19 years. Do you ever see a time, did you think, first of all, 19 years ago, that we'd still be dealing with this issue? And do you ever see a time when these warning labels, these wacky warning labels, won't be necessary because we won't have some of the frivolous lawsuits that seem to come down the pike?
The only way I see that happening is if there are one or two situations where somebody gets hurt because they didn't read the warning label because it was too long. More and more experts are telling us that the personal injury lawyers who say they're helping us by filing the lawsuits that leave these warnings are actually probably hurting public safety because as warning labels become so long that people tune them out, they're ignoring the ones that they need. So I think there could be a point in time where you get to warnings that are they're trying to reduce them down to a couple of lines instead of booklets. Now, you can buy a pen these days, and it'll come with a booklet full of warning labels. The simplest devices come with pamphlets, and every other paragraph seems to have a bold warning, and we've all seen these. Maybe you don't as much as since you're in Canada, but you probably get a lot of American-made products over there, too.
Yeah. Oh, I love the job writing those pamphlets. Oh, gosh. It's got to be a gold mine. Bob, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program to talk about the wacky warning labels, and it's always great to have you on each week with Let's Be Fair. If people want more information, how can they find you?
They can go to centerforamericatv.com and see the pictures of these warning labels and see how they can enter and try to win that $1,000 grand prize.
Bob, thanks for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you, Peter.
Bob DiRigo-Jones, radio host and author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0357, and you'll find links to Bob's website. And coming up right now, this week's edition of Let's Be Fair. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. People who have heard about our annual Wacky Warning Labels contest often ask us if there are certain kinds of labels we don't accept for our contest, even if they are funny. That's a really good question, and the answer is yes. There are many hilarious warnings that aren't necessarily common sense, so they're needed for consumer safety reasons. I'd like to tell you about one funny label we haven't used, and why. The warning comes on packaging for a pain reliever called PMS Mitol. Obviously, it's for women, but it warns, do not use if you have an enlarged prostate. Now, let's be fair. You don't need to be a doctor to know that someone with PMS is not going to have a prostate. Kids, trust me. But the side effects of this medicine are not common knowledge, and there may be a man somewhere with a headache so bad he's willing to use PMS Midol, so that warning needs to be there. If you have a funny, common sense warning that would be good for our contest, send it to us. Find out how you could be the next $1,000 grand prize winner at centerforamericatv.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the comic book. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about a new contest from the folks at Ripley's Believe It or Not. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. I've got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you here on a program I also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But before we get to that, I just want to mention very quickly that we would love to hear from you here at the Stuff File program. Just send an email with your thoughts or questions about the show, and we'll respond. Just email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and some of the questions might even make it onto the air in our mailbag section. So, send us an email. Again, peter@thestufffile.com. Also, Facebook users, we urge you to join the Stuff File fan page. It's easy to find. It's at facebook.com/thestufffileprogram. We'd love to have you as part of the fun. The more, the merrier. We have extra Stuff File news stories, stories that sometimes don't make it onto the air and the program, but we put it upon the fan page so you can check out some of those wacky news stories there as well. And remember, this show was also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, police and firefighters were called in after a heated discussion over the shape of the earth reached fiery levels in eastern Ontario. Police in Brockville say that they were called to St. Lawrence Park after an intense argument between family members. They say a woman who insisted the earth was flat was locking horns with her boyfriend's father, who argued it is round. Investigators say the 56-year-old man grew so enraged that he started throwing things into their campfire, including a propane cylinder. Firefighters were called to put out the flames. Police say the man took off and will face a mischief charge. They say neither party would change their views. Well, full disclosure, I spent 2.5 years early in my career living in Brockville, 2.5 years of my life that I will never get back. Therefore, sadly, this story doesn't surprise me. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff Off program, shall we? The folks at Ripley's Believe It or Not have a new contest. It's called My Believe It or Not Moment. It's a chance to win cash prizes and be part of Ripley's Believe It or Not history. To talk about it, we are welcoming back onto the show Edward Meyer, the VP of Exhibits and Archives from Ripley's Believe It or Not. He joins us on the line from Florida. Hi, Edward.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for having us on. And I'm the crazy guy that's come up with yet another crazy contest. You know, I try to have one every summer of some sort. My main goal, my main job with the company is to get exhibits to display in our museums. However, I'm also very involved in our publishing department, and I consider myself a book person, so I'm always trying to get people to read and write. And in the last couple of years, what we've done is we've given away Ripley books as prizes, so that encourages reading. And we've tried to come up with some sort of contest that involves some sort of writing. This year, first time ever, this is a brand new attempt by us. We're asking people, and we got four different age groups that I'll discuss in a second, but we're asking people to tell us a personal story, something unbelievable that has happened to them. 200 words or less, and that's not very much, so I'm not really making anybody have to sweat too hard. But as it turns out, so far people are having trouble keeping to 200 words, so maybe I should have made it a little bit bigger. 200 words or less, tell us an amazing thing that happened to you. And we're giving away prizes of $500 for each age group, as I said, four different age groups. Then another $1,000 for the best of the best all around. And then another $1,000 for the most creative person that writes their story on something either slash unusual or directly related to the story. Now, my sample prior to the start of the contest was bowling. If your unbelievable story is that you bowled a perfect game, for an example, write me the story on a bowling pin or on a bowling ball or maybe on the bottom of your bowling shoe, and you could win a potential extra $1,000. So I want to have some fun. I want to see people write. I want to hear some stories that we might end up putting in our cartoons or our books. But I'm also hoping to get some weird stuff that I can display in our museums.
Wow.
So that's it in a nutshell.
Now,
we have eight and under.
Right.
9 to 14, 15 to 18, and then 19 and above. So we're trying to get kids involved. We want everybody and anybody who loves Ripley's to give it a shot.
Now, do you have to verify these stories?
Well, I hope I don't have to do that. The submission form, which is available at our website, ripleys.com, has a couple rules to make sure people aren't just making stuff up and whatever. But I will do whatever is necessary. If somebody comes up with a story that even I can't believe, then we're going to have to verify it with some notaries or whatever. Prior to handing out the cash. But, I'm looking for stories that are unbelievable in the Ripley sort of style and tradition that hopefully I can go, wow, that's pretty amazing, contact the person, have a chat with them, and make the decision or not whether it's real. Young kids, because of contest rules, we have to have a parent sign off on it anyway, so hopefully the parent will admit that it's real or not. And, ultimately, because we are Ripley's, believe it or not, we have to have a real story. We don't want people to make it up. But, in a literary style, they can certainly embellish and put some adjectives in there to make it, hyperbole, make it more amazing sounding than it might be. And then it's up to us as the judges to determine, what's the most unbelievable story, what was written the best. And then the third category was something written on something strange. To date, the only odd thing I have, and this is pretty cute, this is from an 11-year-old. It's a story about him going bird watching with his grandmother. And I love that the very first words of the story are, "My crazy grandmother and I." So, he has an opinion of his grandmother that sets up the story pretty cool right away. But they apparently went bird watching at 4:30 in the morning, and they set up a blanket that they try to scare the birds into to capture them, to band them. Okay, put the little date and health mark on them. So he's written it on a little bag made out of handkerchiefs, and that they use to actually catch real birds. And then he has in addition to the story on the outside of the bag, he has a little toy bird on the inside. So I thought, this is pretty darn clever. So that's my number one at this point. Contest hasn't been going on too long. And as I said a little earlier, we've had more disqualifications so far than entries because people are having trouble with that 200-word minimum. But our newspaper cartoon, which is now 98 years old, the longest running cartoon in newspaper history, we try to minimize it to 30 words or less. And our books are typically, 150 to 200 words captions. So we can do it. We know somebody else can too. And it's a number that we didn't just dream up. We want to keep it brief and get straight to the point.
Well, as you say, the submissions must be 200 words or less, but as they also say, a picture's worth 1,000 words. Can people send pictures in as well?
Well, a pitcher might get you some extra bonus points, but no, this is a writing contest, so you got to write something.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I wasn't assuming that they were going to send it.
I'm with you there. Yeah, a caption of 20 words with a photo still could win.
Yes, I wasn't assuming that they were going to send a picture in without writing something. I meant in addition to writing something.
Always love pitchers.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the contest is open from now until, with entries being accepted through till September the 5th, right?
Correct. We are going to give away some Ripley books weekly for whatever we get that we consider, potentially the best that might get into the final sort of thing. So, there's book prizes to be had, and you can enter as many times as you want. So you could get yourself a whole Ripley library here over the 14-week summer. And the final announcements will be made the first week of September online, and we'll personally phone the winners.
Mm. Now, I notice you have the age groups, and it is during the summer. I don't know if you got in contact before the end of the school year with schools about this, but this sounded like a great idea for kids to have some sort of little project over the course of the summer when they were not in school. Did you contact any schools?
Well, no, we haven't, but we're on the same wavelength as you. We're actually testing it, thinking families are traveling at this time, so they're more likely to go to our auditoriums. So we've got the posters and ads up in the locations. But we're also planning, if it's successful, to do it specifically for schools in the fall. And we did, I said we didn't contact schools. We talked to a few teachers before school was let out, and they all thought it was a good idea, but they did not think that, there would be any way they could help us enforce it over the summer, and thought that it would be better to do it during the school year if that was our target market. So I think we'll end up doing something similar, maybe not exactly the same, but something for school kids come September.
Now, I know you say your goal is to have more stuff for the archives and exhibits, which is why you like to get people to write their story on something or with something that you can also exhibit. But when all is said and done and this contest comes to an end in September, will you have some sort of collection where we will be able to read about what has been entered into the contest later on?
Well, I certainly hope so. Given that we get enough entries, we will be posting them on our website in some sort of regularity. And then, there may be a display in an auditorium at some point that is literally just read the story. But I think, in terms of the museums, the more visual, the better is going to work. So really, really trying to cover both my main targets here, publishing and exhibitry.
Now, people can find out more information. There is a complete submission form, I understand, on the website, correct?
That's correct. Ripley's.com/contest. And, there's no real hardcore rules, but there's a couple things, and that 200-word limit is one that maybe needs to be in bolder letters since people are missing it. But, it's a pretty easy contest. Really geared for all ages. Hopefully we can have some fun with some little kids too.
And again, contest entries rather are accepted right through until September the 5th. I always have a joy and pleasure having you on the program, Edward. Thank you once again for being on the show with us and to share this really exciting new contest.
All right. Well, Peter, thank you very much for having us. Thank you, all my Canadian fans. We love to hear from you as well as the people down here in Florida. So hopefully we'll get somebody writing on a piece of birch bark or something from Canada.
Edward Meyer from Ripley's Believe It or Not. The contest again is my Believe It or Not moment. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0357, and you'll find links to the Ripley's website where you'll find all the contest rules and details. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
earlier, we had a story from Brockville, Ontario, a place that for a brief period of time, although then it felt like an eternity, I actually lived. Well, not too far up the road from Brockville and clearly breathing the same air is Smiths Falls, Ontario. There, a woman is accused of donning a wig and glasses to impersonate her own mother so that she could take a driving test on her behalf. The driving instructor allegedly grew suspicious of the 39-year-old woman, who was claiming to be 73, and called police. They say an investigation revealed the woman had dressed herself to resemble her mother. Police say she was trying to pass the test on her mom's behalf. The woman, whose name was not released, has been charged with adult impersonation with intent. Well, either she believes her mother looks very young, or she has low self-esteem, because why, oh why, would a woman in her 30s think that she could pass for her mother, who was in her 70s, in order to bamboozle authorities while taking a driving test? Well, one reason, and one reason only, she's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0357. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0357. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.